gonna rock? Do we gonna fold? Do we let it pop? Don't let it go. X gon' give it to ya. He gon' give it to ya. X gon' give it to ya. He gon' give it to ya. First we gonna rock? Do we gonna fold? Do we let it pop? Don't let it go. X gon' give it to ya. He gon' give it to ya. X gon' give it to ya. He gon' give it to ya. He never gave nothing to me. Every time I turn around, cats got.
First we gonna rock, then we gonna roll, then we let it pop, then we rationally discuss film discourse.
Wow.
On Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who's always ready to break the fourth wall.
Mike Secretio.
How are you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. That's true. I'm a very big fan of fourth wall breaking, so.
Right. You could argue.
Good job, Mike.
You could argue we're doing that right now.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know how this works.
I think if we're talking directly to the audience, that's the breaking the fourth wall.
It's a fourth wall. Whoa.
But is there a fourth wall for podcasts that talk directly to an audience?
Find out on our first episode of the Fourth Wall Cast.
Which is all about breaking the fourth wall.
That's right. But yeah, I'm good. I'm excited to talk about Deadpool because this is a big deal, I think.
Yeah.
For superhero movies.
Yeah, I mean, this movie's been it's been blowing up. Like it's
yeah.
Like, way more successful than I think anybody thought it was going to be. But we're going to talk about Deadpool a bunch later on in the show. If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss every media we're consuming lately. After that, we'll move on to our feature review. This week, we are reviewing the new film from director Tim Miller and what is technically the eighth film in the X-Men franchise, Deadpool.
Yeah, technically.
Technically, yeah, like it's the shared universe thing.
Yep.
I think it's gonna be interesting to see where the X-Men franchise goes from here. You know, now that Deadpool was a huge hit, I feel like more like R-rated stuff might come out of that universe.
I hope so. It should.
Like I said, we're gonna talk about that a lot more later on. Right now, let's get into some film news. Mike Secretio.
Yes, Mike Smith.
Why don't we do that?
All right. That sounds like a good plan, because that's normally what we do.
all right, so for film news this week, got a few things. It's been a little while since we've done a film bookcast, and I blame you for that.
I take full responsibility.
Because we were supposed to review Hail Caesar, and, you know, one of us saw it.
And, like, the other didn't, because he's a loser. Well, I'll just tell you, he's named Mike.
Right. They'll never know.
Yeah.
So we're pretty behind on film news. So some stuff happened over the past couple of weeks that I did want to talk about. The first of which is that a few months ago we brought up this new Star Trek series that's being developed at CBS, right? And it's going to be premiering on CBS All Access, which is their streaming service.
Right.
So it won't actually be on regular old CBS. It'll be on their basically like CBS Netflix version or something like that. Like it's going to be
right.
a paid for streaming service. Then. At the time, we didn't know who was making the show other than, I think, Alex Kurtzman, right? He was producing it. Now we know that's Brian Fuller, creator of shows like Pushing Daisies, Wonderfalls, and Hannibal, is going to be the new showrunner of the new Star Trek series.
So that's pretty huge news.
That is pretty big. I mean, are you a fan of any of Brian Fuller's shows, Mike?
Not that I've seen. I've heard really great things about all of those.
Yeah, I've heard awesome things about all of his shows, and I just never have gotten around
never got anything. Around to it. Yeah.
Yeah, Hannibal's a show that I've wanted to watch for a long time. But you know,
yeah.
So it's, I don't have Amazon Prime, so what am I going to do?
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. He has a track record of making really great shows that get canceled.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't know how that bodes for this new Star Trek that will. I believe air one episode, the pilot will air on CBS.
Right. And then the rest.
All of it will be on their thing that I'm not going to pay for and never see these. So that's a shame, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is a shame. I mean, I want to say the brand awareness will probably help Star Trek out. It won't be canceled so easily.
That's true.
But at the same time, there was brand awareness for Hannibal, and that show's over now. The Hannibal did last for three seasons.
It did make three seasons.
Make three seasons, and they were looking for a place for the fourth season after NBC canceled it.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, they've not found anything. He's also got another show coming out called American Gods, which I think they're airing on Stars or Showtime.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that's an adaptation of the Neil Gaiman novel.
Correct.
So I don't really know how his the time's going to work, how he's going to work on both shows, but...
I don't know. It's Star Trek. There's multiple timelines.
Boom. Definitely. And he actually, and Brian Fuller actually used to work on Star Trek in the past. He used to work on Deep Space Nine, where he wrote two episodes, and he was a producer and writer on Star Trek Voyager for all seven seasons of that show.
Wow, okay.
So he's actually, he's like pretty deep into the Trek universe already. So this is actually like pretty crazy, news for Trek fans. Like, I saw like when this news broke, like I follow a lot of people who are big fans of Brian Fuller, and I follow a lot of people who are big fans of Star Trek, and there's a lot of overlap in that fan base, in those fan bases.
That makes sense.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely very exciting for Trek fans, and I'll probably check the show out. At least the pilot episode, which will air on CBS. I don't know if I'll have CBS access at that time, but you never know.
Time will tell.
Time will tell. Moving on into the next piece of film news, and this is something that is kind of like a cumulative story of a few months of stories. Mm-hmm. Universal Studios, not the monsters, are developing their own Universal Monsters universe, right? And this is something they tried to do 2 years ago now with Dracula Untold, which was supposed to be the first movie in the Universal Monsters universe. And that didn't work because that movie was horrendous. So
I've never even heard of it.
Really? I remember it coming
out. Oh, wait. No, I do remember that movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I mean, I didn't see it. So I can't say for sure if it was horrendous. But, like, everybody I know who saw it, every critic that I follow said it was really terrible. And nobody liked it. Like, it's just overall flat. And from what I understand about the movie, like, it kind of does its own thing for a long time and then just kind of shoehorns in, like, a universe building towards the end. Because they kind of decided at the last minute, like, oh, let's just throw in monsters and make a whole universe.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And that movie bombed spectacularly. Like, it like, really flopped hard. And so it seems like they're trying again to try to actually build a universe from the ground up this time. And it seems like they're really taking their time kind of, like, putting out movies and stuff like that. And this universe is being developed by Alex Kurtzman again, who's producing the Star Trek show. And as well as Chris Morgan, who writes all the Fast and Furious movies.
So, like, you're in, I guess.
I mean, I'm not in. Like, that's... anyway, why I wanted to bring this up is that a couple months ago, they basically announced that the first movie in this new universe was going to be a reboot of The Mummy. And that Tom Cruise was going to star as the lead of this Mummy reboot.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. That's very, like, it just seems like that's beneath him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, Tom Cruise is a guy who already headlines his own franchise with Mission Impossible. And is already, like, going to be headlining a smaller franchise with Jack Reacher if Jack Reacher 2 goes well.
Right.
Right?
Sure, then, why not have The Mummy?
Yeah, well, he's like one of the biggest stars in the world. He can do whatever he wants, and I feel like a reboot of The Mummy, which The Mummy is like I like The Mummy.
Yeah, I mean, all of those movies, all of them are like this, where it's like, well, I mean, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, like, The Mummy was, you know, it was a horror franchise in the 30s, and then it was rebooted into like the action adventure series in the
the
90s, 2000s, which is what I'm kind of thinking about.
I'm thinking about those also, but I was talking about the like 30s and 40s, like the B Universal monster movies,
right? And I think that's kind of what they're doing, but also like maybe a little more like adventure-y. Like, I feel like it's going to be more blockbustery than it is going to be horror stuff.
Right, that's true.
And so, but you know, those Brendan Fraser Mummy movies, like, they're fine.
Right.
But I feel like the first one's fine.
The first one's pretty good.
Yeah, the first one's solid. Like, it's an enjoyable, it's an enjoyable time. Second one, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, but they're in London that time, man.
Second one had some of the worst CGI I'd ever seen in any movie, if you recall. I don't know if you remember The Rock's head CGI'd onto a giant scorpion.
Oh my god.
Towards the end of that movie.
Yeah.
It's really bad. It's really bad.
I forgot about that.
And then there was a third one. There was a third Mummy movie that everyone forgets existed. Including me, until right now. That came out like 7 years after the second one. And it was
Tomb of something. I don't remember.
Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
That was it.
Is what it was. And it was Chinese mummies.
Yes. And who could forget the spin-off franchise of the Scorpion King?
Right, the Scorpion King.
I think there's two of those movies.
There's like three of those.
Oh my god.
They really milked, like, The Mummy was a surprising hit. Like, people really liked it. So anyway, I feel like the Mummy is kind of a tainted franchise at this point. Like, it's not bad. Like, it's you know, but I feel like it's just, it's The Mummy. Like, it's a stupid adventure movie. And it seems like it's beneath Tom Cruise, but, you know, who knows? That's going to be directed by Alex Kurtzman in his directorial debut.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be released on June 9th, 2017, as the first of the Universal Monster movies. And the reason I'm bringing this up again is because, like 2 weeks ago or last week, Johnny Depp was just cast as the Invisible Man for the next for the next Universal Monster movie, which I guess will be The Invisible Man.
Right. Makes sense.
And so, I mean, that's pretty crazy casting, too. That's, like, another really big swing. Like, that's a huge name for these,
yeah,
for these silly, like, adventure monster movies. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, definitely. Josh Brolin was on the Nerdist podcast recently, and they were talking about the Marvel movies. And
right,
she mentioned the fact that it's kind of the shift that happened where the old superhero movies and comic book movies and stuff were kind of like schlock, and if you were in them, you had given up. And Marvel decided that no, they're going to end that. We're going to hire as many of the best actors as we can find,
right,
and make these awesome, serious, real movies. And I guess Universal's taking a cue from that and trying to turn these B horror movies that had like 27 sequels and like no one was in them and stuff, and have Tom Cruise and Johnny Depp star in them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I agree with that. But I think just what really strikes me about this, that I mean, Marvel has, like, sometimes has big stars in their movies. But right, they're usually, like they're really good actors, but they're not, like, the absolute A-list. Or if they were the A-list.
Not before it started. Now they are.
Right, yeah. But, or, like, if they were the A-list, it was, like, it's because Marvel made them the A-list. Like, Robert Downey Jr. was not a big star before Iron Man. You know, people,
right,
like, people kind of knew who he was. He was nominated for an Oscar once before yeah, that. But, like, you know, he, like, Iron Man was such a breakout hit for him. And, like, mm-hmm, you know,
that was his comeback.
The major celebrity now. Chris Pratt, another example.
Right.
Of somebody who wasn't the A-list, and now he is. You know, this is, like, Universal just starting out with Tom Cruise and Johnny yeah, Depp. Like,
Universal doesn't have time to play around, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like, you know, I think they know that, like, without these, like, big names attached, people might not be really interested in these movies.
Yeah, yeah. And as we've talked about it, the Marvelization of so many franchises where everything has to be as connected as possible, yeah, and people's studios are just jumping in, assuming, I mean, with the Universal monster movies, you kind of can, but assuming everyone knows everything already.
Right.
Like we're doing with Batman versus Superman. We don't need setup. We had Man of Steel, right, but so you, now that Universal's doing this for their monsters, which I think is cool. I mean, I like this idea. I hope it works out.
Yeah, no, I'm, I think, you know, I like monsters. I like Universal monsters.
Yeah.
So, you know, we'll see what happens.
I didn't mean to cut you off, but we talked about how excited we would be for a Godzilla versus King Kong movie versus Pacific, yes, Rim. So obviously we're on board for these kinds of things.
That's absolutely true. But like a Godzilla versus King Kong movie won't have, you know, somebody like Tom Cruise involved.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
You know,
it'll have that guy from Kick-Ass.
Yeah. Godzilla had, you know, Aaron Johnson in the lead role. Like he's
right,
not a big star. He's been in a lot of big movies. Like he was in Avengers and he was in Kick-Ass and stuff, but like, you
yeah,
know, he's not an A-list top, like, you know, Tom Cruise and Johnny Depp are people who are household names. Like, if you go to, like, my mom and say, like,
right,
do you know, like, you know who Tom Cruise is? And she'll be like, yeah. But if I go up to my mom and say, do you know who Aaron Taylor Johnson is? She'll be like, no, who's that? And I'll be like, he's been in, like, six things you've seen. And
yep, he's that guy from that thing.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the Universal Monsters universe news. I just wanted to talk about that because I think it's, like, really interesting that they're casting these huge stars.
Yeah.
And then finally, film news. We wanted to talk about Star Wars because, you know, it seems like now we might as well just talk about Star Wars forever. I think that's
yeah,
I think it's basically the plan.
Yep, we're gonna add a new segment, Star Wars news.
Star Wars news. It's actually a great idea. It'll be like Slash Film.
Yeah. oh, just add another way that we're like them.
So Star Wars Episode 8 is the sequel to Star Wars Episode 7, and.
Is that how it works, Mike?
That is how it works. That is how numbers work. And so that movie was originally supposed to be coming out in May 2017. Mm-hmm. And shortly after, I feel like midway through January, Disney announced that the release date for Star Wars Episode 8 will now be moving to December 2015 instead. So they delayed it by like 7 months.
December 2017.
That's what I mean. Yeah, 2017. Yeah. Otherwise, like we'd be out already.
It's coming out in the past?
We already saw it. Oh, what? yeah, but I think that's it's definitely probably good news. Like, it definitely gives Rian Johnson more time to work on his script and film and stuff. And it seems like one of the reasons given was that they want to rewrite the script, or Rian Johnson wants to rewrite the script to focus more on the new characters that Force Awakens introduced because people reacted to them so positively.
Right, which is amazing.
Yeah, that's definitely great.
If there's anyone I trust to rewrite a movie and like have it be delayed by 6 months and have, you know, all this stuff and like just implicitly trust that it's going to still be amazing and will be better for having been pushed back, it's Rian Johnson.
Absolutely.
Like, yeah.
The franchise is in such good hands with Rian Johnson. I'm so excited for that. this delay in Star Wars Episode VIII has caused other studios to shuffle around their schedules like really quickly.
Yeah. Everyone's panicking now.
Yeah. Cause it was really like, you know, Star Wars Episode VIII was going to be released on May 26th, 2017,
mm-hmm.
which incidentally would have been the 40th anniversary weekend of the original Star Wars.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So it's a little disappointing that it's not being released on like the 40th anniversary of the original Star Wars, because that'd be really cool.
Right.
But, you know, whatever.
but let Rian Johnson do his thing.
Yeah, I'd rather have like a great movie than, you know, something that was rushed to production.
And some cool marketing thing.
Yeah. But, you know, the result is that, you know, there's this empty spot in May now that was once taken up by Star Wars. And now, like, everybody is like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
We got to, like, move around. And plus, now Star Wars in December. So movies that were in December have to be moved around to like, avoid Star Wars. So,
yep.
So when it moved out of May, Guardians of the Galaxy 2 is also opening in May in 2017. Okay. And so they're both like both Guardians and Star Wars are owned by Disney. And so it was always kind of an odd move that they would release both of their space-based franchises within like 3 weeks of each other. So it's probably good that Star Wars is moving to December. But Disney actually moved Pirates of the Caribbean 5 over to Star Wars' spot in May.
Interesting.
And, you know, Star Wars' spot in May, or in December rather, was already taken by Avatar 2. Which, as soon as it was placed in December, Avatar 2 promptly moved to summer 2018, I believe, is the new date for it now. I mean, Avatar 2 is a movie that has not even started filming yet.
Wow.
And it was supposed to come out in 2014. Like,
yeah, James Cameron's got to be pissed.
Well, I think I'm not sure if he'd be pissed. I feel like there's a little bit of working with Disney on this, on Avatar, because they're building an Avatar area in Disney's theme park.
Really?
They're building Avatar Land in the Disney Animal Kingdom.
I did not know that.
Yeah, so I feel like there's got to be at least a little bit of communication there. And, like,
yeah.
I think they might have known that Avatar 2 wasn't making that date, so they decided to move it.
Give them an excuse to push it.
Yeah. You know, there's that. So there's that. And also, Ready Player One, Steven Spielberg's movie, was supposed to come out in December 2017, and it's now been delayed until 2018.
Wow.
So, and there's a lot of other shuffling around like that, other... You know, dicks all over the place.
Just Disney swinging their dicks. Like, yeah, we're coming in. We're coming into December. Everyone get out of the way.
Pretty much. Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, good for them, I guess.
Yeah, you know, if they got it, flaunt it.
That's and if it's going to lead to a better Star Wars and more Rian Johnson, I'm okay.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay
and the Star Wars Episode 8 actually just started filming yesterday, had its first day of production. Rian Johnson had an awesome tweet. about it, where he said, "Day one in the can, meaning we finished, not that we filmed it on a toilet." So, though I'm not saying we didn't. Okay, I should stop typing now.
if you're not following Rian Johnson on Twitter, you should be.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I'm really excited for this production period for Star Wars Episode VIII, much more so than Episode VII, just because of Rian Johnson's Twitter presence.
Yeah, that's so true.
Because, you know, J.J. Abrams is a very secretive guy. He's not on Twitter. He doesn't, like, post anything from the post-production thing. And, you know, I think Rian Johnson will keep things secretive. Like, he won't, like, you know, just reveal, like, oh, these are the twists in the movie and this is what we're doing. But like, I think he's going to have a lot of fun, you know, just being on Twitter cracking jokes and messing with fans.
I hope so. It's kind of what he does all the time anyway. So.
Yeah, exactly. So So I remember the day he was announced as the director of Star Wars Episode 8, because Rian Johnson is a fair, like, an infrequent guest in the Slash film cast. Like, he pops up once in a while.
Okay.
And like, the day he was announced as director of Star Wars Episode 8, I looked back at his Twitter feed just to see what, like, he had recently tweeted, to see if he had said anything about Star Wars. And his last tweet before announcing it was, like, giving Dave Chen a bunch of shit because because Rian Johnson was on a podcast that was rated higher on iTunes than the Slash Filmcast.
Oh, that's amazing. And now he's directing Star Wars.
And now he's directing Star Wars. It's just exciting. It's really fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
And they announced the official cast list of Star Wars Episode 8 as well. It's basically everyone you would expect from Force Awakens. You know, all the main cast members are there. As well as a couple of newcomers, including one unknown actress, as well as Benicio Del Toro and Laura Dern.
Ugh.
Which is very exciting. Benicio Del Toro, that was already kind of like, people kind of knew he was already in it. I think he's playing some kind of villain character.
What if this is how they link Star Wars to Marvel?
Like, if he's just playing the Collector?
He's just the Collector. Because he kind of almost is a Star Wars character.
Yeah, I could sort of see it. It'd be interesting. I doubt that'll happen. That's basically exactly how, did you ever see Patton Oswalt's bit on Parks and Recreation where he just, like, has, like, a 12-minute scene where he, like, describes Star Wars, what he thinks Star Wars Episode 7 will be like, and he links it to Marvel and everything like that?
I've never watched the whole uncut, like,
really
single take thing. Oh, man. Yeah.
I've watched it a bunch. And, yeah, in that like, long speech he has, he, like, talks about how it's going to link to the Marvel Universe through the Infinity Glove that Thanos has, which the Collector is tied to. So,
that's amazing.
So you're right. Maybe it could happen. But
this is it. Adds on to something.
Yeah, but Laura Dern, very exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Because I really like Laura Dern. She's not in enough stuff. Like, she's definitely, like, you know, she doesn't show up in enough things. It's very upsetting.
Yeah.
So it's definitely cool that she's going to be in Star Wars Episode 8. I don't know how big her role will be. But, you know, we'll see. Because, I mean, Episode 7, there will be, like, actors who you thought were going to have, a fairly significant role in Episode 7 ended up, like, not playing a huge role, like Max von Sydow.
Right. Or everyone else.
Gwendolyn Christie, who played Captain Phasma.
Right.
And supposedly she's going to have a bigger role in Episode 8. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, cause no matter what, we're going to be pumped for it. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's a new Star Wars movie. Like, there's no way to not be pumped for Star Wars, is basically how it is. I mean, there is if it's the prequels, but yeah. All right. So I guess that about wraps up our film news. Mike, would you like to move on to our discussions?
Yes, I would.
All right. So why don't you start off? What's your discussion for the day?
Sure. So I recently started watching Blindspot, which is an NBC show that finished airing the first half of its season a couple months ago. I forget exactly when.
Okay.
But they aired a 10-episode, you know, part one of season one, and it got picked up for part two and a second season, I believe. So the second half of season one starts airing February 29th on NBC. And this is a kind of procedural cop drama type thing, but the twist is that this woman wakes up in the middle of Times Square, totally naked, covered in tattoos head to toe, and the tattoos are puzzles. So, like, it's not a very unique idea. It's been done in Prison Break, sort of had it, where the tattoo was a map of the prison, and kind of stuff, kind of things like that have been done before. But this stars, I forgot to mention that, it stars Sullivan Stapleton, Jamie Alexander, Rob Brown, Audrey Esparza, Ashley Johnson, and Marianne Jean-Baptiste as the FBI team that Jamie Alexander's character is delivered to because their names are tattooed on her, so they bring her to them.
Right. Now, I'm guessing you mostly started watching this for Ashley Johnson, am I right?
Mostly, yeah. That was where I was going to get there, Mike. Yeah, Ashley Johnson is on the Dungeons & Dragons show Critical Role that I watch, and she has been away from that show to film Blindspot.
Right.
So that's where I heard about it. And, you know, I figured why not support people I like? So I'll check it out. And actually, I started out the first two episodes. I was like, yeah, this is, you know, FBI cop drama stuff. But then they start introducing more unique elements about the tattoos and what that mystery and puzzle is. That's actually pretty interesting. So I've stuck around so far through 8 episodes. So I'll at least be watching the rest of season 1 or part 1, and then I'll check out part 2. And hopefully it's awesome, because it's cool. Ashley Johnson has a much bigger role than I was expecting. She's she plays Patterson, which is the like lab tech person who's like always typing at keyboards and stuff, like in every other cop drama show. But she is the one who is figuring out the tattoo puzzles every episode, because she's the smart one.
She's the one smart person in the FBI.
kind of. It falls into that where Sullivan Stapleton's character, he's Kurt Weller, he's like the main FBI agent, is kind of just like always squinting and like half yelling at people, and like that's kind of his whole character.
Right.
Which is a shame, because there is interesting stuff being that's been introduced. I mean, it's only 10 episodes, which for a network like series is like a pilot. Like, there's barely anything for a network show.
Yeah.
So it's introducing stuff about why his name is tattooed on Jane Doe, Jamie Alexander's character. And it's interesting things, but, like, he can't carry it so far. But other than that, it's a fun movie. It's a fun show. So I think people should check it out and at least give season 1 as a whole a try, and we'll see. We'll see where it goes from there.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I watched the pilot episode of Blindspot, and, like, I thought it was fine, but I wasn't, like, super, like, enthralled by it.
Yeah.
But it sounds like you, like, suggest to keep going. Like,
Just give it a couple more episodes, because the ensemble cast is all, like, the team has, like, a fun dynamic. They're fun to watch, and the tattoo stories are interesting enough that I want to know what's going on, so.
Okay.
And again, that returns on NBC February 29th.
Cool beans, and that is Blind Spot. So I have a couple discussions today, 2 movies and 1 TV show. The first of which is the movie that we were supposed to review a couple weeks ago. It's called Hail Caesar.
Spoilers for our intro thing about who didn't see it. It was me.
Yeah, I guess I have to throw you under the bus. I'm going to talk about this movie. So Hail Caesar is the new comedy from the Coen brothers, set in 1950s Hollywood. And I'm a huge fan of the Coen brothers, as I've talked about on this podcast before, I'm sure, and what talked about at length during our Complete Works review of Raising Arizona. Huge fan of the Coen brothers. And so I was very excited for Hail Caesar coming in. And I do think it's less outwardly funny than it was sold as, but it's still very funny. Like, it's often hilarious. But it's not the... like the screwball comedy that I think the trailers make it out to be.
Yeah, that's definitely how the trailers, and I assumed it would just be this wacky screwball comedy.
Right. I mean, there's definitely whack. There's whack to it, but I think it's a little more deeper than that. I think it's mostly an excuse for the Coens to make a pitch-perfect recreation of the 1950s and of the movies that existed during that time period. There are long stretches where it's just like, all right, and now we're going to watch a scene from a musical that's filming.
That's it?
Yeah, and it'll be like a 7-minute like musical like interlude.
That's kind of awesome.
And it's great. I think, there's so many like just great recreations of like classic movie genres that like don't really get made that much anymore. And also like the Coens haven't done before. And so you get to see the Coens kind of playing around in different genres, like in one movie. And so you have that, and you have an aristocratic, like high class drama, made by like this, like arty director, and, a lot of really fun stuff. And, I think, a lot of people have said like they weren't totally on board with Hail Caesar for whatever reason. And I would say like, I liked it a lot. I think, watching it, I feel like I will need to see it again in order to like fully appreciate it, which is kind of par for the course for a lot of Coen's movies. I feel like they often take a lot, like a couple of viewings in order to really wrap your head around.
Yeah, that's definitely true.
But anyway, most of the ensemble, is really only in a couple scenes each. Like they only have like 1 or 2 scenes, a lot of the stars. But all of them really memorable. I think Channing Tatum, Tilda Swinton, and Scarlett Johansson were probably the standouts to me. They were great. And also Alden Ehrenreich, who is basically this, like the one unknown cast member in Hail Caesar. Like, if you look at the cast list of that movie, it's, like, a huge, like, A-list cast of, like, I mean, the main, like, I guess the main stars would be Josh Brolin and George Clooney. But also Alden Ehrenreich is right up there with them. Like, he's, like, as big of a role as those characters. And he's amazing. He's really funny in his scenes. He plays an actor who is mostly starred in cowboy movies. Like, he plays, like, a Western actor who, like, his main job is, like, to just be a rodeo clown, basically. Like,
right.
Like, he's not that smart. He doesn't talk very well. But he, you know, like, he looks good on camera and he can, like, ride a horse. So they, like, let him be in movies. And then the studio decides to change his image and he has to act in, like, this high-class drama that that Ralph Fiennes is directing.
That's amazing.
It's wonderful. It's so funny. It results in some of the movie's best moments, that stuff. And a lot of great stuff like that. There's some classic Coen moments in here, and it's just a really good time. I really like Hail Caesar. I think I'm gonna like it even more as the more I like sit on it and think about it and see it again. But definitely worth checking out. The Coens are always worth checking out. I also incidentally did catch up on the two Coen movies that I hadn't seen before, which were Intolerable Cruelty and The Lady Killers. They're both on Netflix. And the reason I hadn't seen them before is because they're both kind of considered like the worst of the Coen Brothers movies. almost every other Coen Brothers movie, like you'll see everybody saying like, these are the reasons why this is amazing. And like, right. you don't really find that with Intolerable Cruelty of the Lady Killers, but they're still fun. They're still enjoyable. Like they're not top tier Coens, but they're enjoyable stuff. I just want to throw that out there.
Good to know, Mike.
Yes. And then the other movie I want to talk about this week was Bone Tomahawk, which is awesome.
Yes.
That's the end of my review. The next thing. No, Bone Tomahawk is a Western horror film released last year. It stars Kurt Russell, Patrick Wilson, Matthew Fox, and Richard Jenkins.
I would say don't leave out. It also stars Kurt Russell's mustache.
Yes, yeah. He's really like a... I feel like Kurt Russell grew that like facial hair and mustache for The Hateful Eight, but he didn't want it to go to waste. So he just said, like, after he was done filming that, he was like, "Oh, I'm just going to do this other Western."
I kind of get the feeling that he signed up to do these movies as an excuse for that mustache. I think he wanted the mustache, but was like, "I guess I got to do Westerns now."
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, this is a really unique, like methodical Western. It's beautiful to look at. It's like weirdly hypnotizing. It's sort of slow in parts, but I feel like it's kind of like intentional. There's an odd like supernatural element to it that you know I did not see coming. I didn't know that it was going to be there. And it's not like an overt supernatural thing, but there's definitely like something odd going on in this movie. And you know, it's like it really is like kind of a horror movie, and it didn't really dawn on me until about halfway through the film as I was like watching it. I was like, this is kind of like horror-esque. This is like I'm seeing a lot of horror tropes here, and then it really turned into one. And I was like, wow, this is like it's really unlike anything I've ever seen. And so it's really it's a really fascinating movie to watch. And it also has one of the most brutal death scenes I've ever seen, possibly the most brutal death scene I've ever seen. Yes. It's intense, and I won't go into the details because you should really see it for yourself. Like it's
yeah, it's the one scene I've seen from Bone Tomahawk.
Yeah, it is. It is not for the squeamish. It is
no, definitely not.
But it is awesome. It's I was shocked, and I don't get shocked at movies. But my jaw was on the floor. Like it was nuts. So yeah, Bone Tomahawk definitely worth checking out. So you haven't seen Bone Tomahawk yet, Mike?
No, I have not.
Okay.
It's been on my list for a while.
All right. Because after I watched it, I texted you and was like, you should drop everything you're doing right now and watch Bone Tomahawk.
Spoiler alert. I did not drop everything I was doing.
Well, that's unfortunate. But anyway, Bone Tomahawk is awesome, so definitely check it out. And I got that through the Netflix DVD, like a DVD service. The other thing I want to talk about is a TV show. And it's a show that we've talked about on this podcast a little bit before.
Mm-hmm.
And we were kind of making fun of it. Like, you know, there's no way this will probably be dumb. Like, no way this will be good. The only way I'll watch this show is if it gets phenomenal reviews, like, right out the gate.
That doesn't sound like anything we'd say.
Well, that's literally the words. I was actually listening to us say those words the other day.
We say that about everything.
Right, but about this specifically.
Okay.
Anyway, so, like, we... This is a American Crime Story, The People versus O.J. Simpson.
Oh, yes. I do remember saying those words.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we were both kind of like, we were kind of just joking around about it, like, you know, yeah. making jokes about how, you know, we saw the Bronco, you were in the Bronco, and like making fun of the marketing and thinking like, it seems like kind of a stunt, you know, like,
yeah.
a publicity stunt for FX. And, but in fact, it's actually great. Like, it's,
wow.
Like, I wasn't going to watch it, and then, like, the week before it came out, you know, reviews started coming in, and, like, everything I read was, like, phenomenal. Like, everybody was really on board with the show, and they watched, like, most of the reviews watched, like, six or so episodes of the show. Like, they were given that many episodes as a screener. Wow. Everyone was saying it was great. So I ended up watching the first two episodes, which have aired so far. The third one's airing tonight. Mm-hmm. And it is awesome. Like, this show is really good.
Wow. I wasn't expecting that.
Neither was I. I mean, this is from Ryan Murphy, who does American Horror Story, which is a show I do not like. I think that show is very bad. turns out, Ryan Murphy is actually only, like, kind of a producer of the show. Like, the showrunners are two different people.
Oh, okay.
Whose names are escaping me at the moment. But Ryan Murphy did direct the first two episodes of American Crime Story, People vs. O.J. Simpson, and it's really well directed. And there's very strong performances all around. I think Sarah Paulson's probably the standout for me as Marcia Clark. But Courtney B. Vance as Johnny Cochran is great. Cuba Gooding Jr. as O.J. Simpson is really good. And surprisingly, David Schwimmer as Robert Kardashian. Also very good. Like, I'm on board.
How about that?
Yeah, I think he fits it really well. And, you know, it's like the show plays up the connection to the Kardashians fairly frequently.
Really?
Yeah. And it's the connection's kind of surprising, and it's occasionally clunky, but, like, it's utilized really well. I mean, and, you know, it shows you a different side of the case than I think people had seen before. Like, there's actually, and, you know, this is a dramatization of the O.J. Simpson case, so you kind of have to take some of it with a grain of salt, I would say. But, like, I've looked into certain things after the episodes have aired, and, like, certain things that I thought might have been made up actually happened. Like, for example, in the first episode of the show, O.J. Simpson is staying at the Kardashian's house while things are, like, going down.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a point where he gets suicidal and tries to kill himself in Kim Kardashian's bedroom.
Okay.
Like, when she's like 5 years old at the time. Like, she's really young. And like, that actually happened. Like, that's a thing that, like,
that's crazy.
Actually, like, happened. Like, I looked into that, and that's real. Like, that's nuts. And the show has a lot to say about media and celebrity and race specifically. Instead, like, it doesn't even open with the murder or with, like, you know, OJ like doing the Bronco chase or whatever. It opens with stock footage of the LA riots in the early 90s.
Wow.
As like,
that's a pretty bold statement.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really nuts. And, you know, it's surprisingly great show. I'm really enjoying it. And, you know, this season's still early. Like, it's only two episodes in. So you definitely should just check it out and watch it. It's really good.
There you go. Good to know.
Yeah. All right. So with that all said, Mike, are you ready to move on to our feature review?
Yes.
Good.
This is going to be a good one, I think.
I hope so. This is our feature review of Deadpool.
I love you, Wade Wilson. We can fight this.
You're right. The cancer's only my liver, lungs, prostate, and brain. All things I can live without.
What if I told you we can make you better? You're a fighter. We can give you abilities most men only dream of. Make you a superhero.
You just promise you'll do right by me, so I can do right by someone else.
And please don't make the super suit green or animated.
One thing that never survives this place is a sense of humor.
We'll see about that, Posh Spice.
Oh, come on. You gonna leave me all alone here with less angry Rosie O'Donnell?
I wanna shoot, baby.
Packed in your stack, especially in the back. Brother, I wanna thank your mother for a butt like that. Your shotgun bang. What's that say? I wanna know, how does it hang? Mr. Buck, like Prince Day, you're a lucky mother.
Wait! You may be wondering why the red suit. Well, that's so bad guys can't see me bleed. This guy's got the right idea. He wore the brown pants.
All right, that was from the trailer for Deadpool. It's the newest film from director Tim Miller and the eighth film in the X-Men franchise. It stars Ryan Reynolds as Deadpool, Marina Baccarin, Ed Skrein, TJ Miller, Gina Carano, Brianna Hildebrand, Stefan Kapicic, and Leslie Uggams. And it's written by Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick. And the IMDb plot synopsis reads, a former special forces operative turned mercenary is subjected to a rogue experiment that leaves him with accelerated healing powers, adopting the alter ego, Deadpool.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. No, that is accurate. So, Mike, are you familiar with the character of Deadpool? Like, from before, like, going into this movie, did you know Deadpool at all? Like, are you a fan?
Well, I had heard of him, obviously. He's been the internet's favorite superhero for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, just a few years ago, he just really blew up.
I think really around the time Ryan Reynolds started pushing for this movie, like, because this has been a troubled production, or not production, but a troubled thing for him to be getting made. And right around that time, I think the internet took to him, and he's got a huge fan base. So I had heard of him. I knew some basic stuff about him. But actually, for Christmas, a friend of mine got me the most recent volume one of Deadpool. I think Daniel Way was the writer.
Okay.
Should have looked that up, but I didn't think about it. So I read that. I read that introduction, volume one. And that was a couple months ago. And it's pretty awesome. It's very odd, and it took some getting used to because it doesn't abide by any traditional comic rules of how comics are written and stuff, because that's Deadpool's whole thing, is that he's crazy and he is aware, or thinks at least he's in a comic. You know, it's not clear if he's actually aware or he just thinks he's a comic hero.
Yes.
So that was fun. It's interesting. You know, I knew the story because it was volume one. I knew, you know, how he became Deadpool and all this stuff before going into the movie. But otherwise I wouldn't have known. Cause I knew, I felt I had known, I knew enough just from how long he's been, a main character or a darling of the internet. That was my experience with Deadpool before the movie.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm a Marvel fan from way back. And so, you know, I did know Deadpool. I was familiar with him. My first interaction with Deadpool was the Marvel Ultimate Alliance video game from 2006.
Wow.
Which is a really good game if you've never played it. It's basically just all the Marvel heroes like gathering around for, you know, crazy superhero nonsense. Yeah. And Deadpool was my favorite character to play as because you could cheat and jump over doors that were locked.
That's kind of awesome.
Using Deadpool because he had like a teleportation thing that went like a certain distance.
Yep.
So it helped you just get through the game a lot faster, as I discovered. And also, like, he, you know, cracked jokes the entire time as you were playing him, and it was always pretty funny. I did like Deadpool from that game, and I ended up looking at some of his stuff since then. And, yeah, I enjoyed the character Deadpool. And, you know, this movie's been in the works forever. Like, Ryan Reynolds played Deadpool in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yes,
and that was back in 2009.
Yeah, I was looking into it. Apparently, in a 2005 issue of Deadpool, he says, "I looked like Ryan Reynolds had sex with a Sharpay."
Yeah.
And since that point, Ryan Reynolds is like, "I'm going to play that character." And then he was him in X-Men Origins.
Right, and basically that movie came out, and the idea was that Deadpool might spin off into his own movie from that.
Right.
But the problem was everybody hated X-Men Origins Wolverine, and specifically hated Deadpool in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
They made the worst version. Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing. Deadpool is in the beginning and the end of that movie. And in the beginning of that movie, I remember liking him quite a bit. Like,
I don't remember because it's been that long since I've seen that movie.
Well, I remember the first 5 minutes of X-Men Origins Wolverine are pretty good, and then the rest of that movie is garbage. But the first 5 minutes of that movie is like Wolverine, Deadpool, and the rest of like the Weapon X team, just kind of doing a mission for Stryker. And,
oh yeah, that's right.
You know, you see Deadpool kind of just like cracking jokes. Like he cracks jokes. He like slices a bullet in midair.
Right.
And it was cool. And like, he's like salutes the guy, but like the salute is like kind of half cocked and like,
yeah,
you know, he's like, he doesn't care for authority at all. He's, he's a cool character.
Yeah. Said 14-year-old Mike.
Yeah. It's, basically. But the end of that movie, Deadpool ends up being like the antagonist, right, or like somebody that Wolverine has to fight. And they sew his mouth shut.
Yep.
And, you know, do all this other crazy stuff to him. And he has like laser eyes and like he has all this stuff that like he does not have.
Yeah. I thought the sword in his arms was an interesting take on Deadpool's swords. It was like sure, why not? Because like Wolverine has claws. Like, I get it.
Right.
But then everything else about it was bad.
And so, I mean, fan reaction to that movie and Deadpool's portrayal in that movie was so negative that, you know, it just didn't happen. The Deadpool movie didn't happen, even though Wolverine made a lot of money. Like, that movie actually, like, did really well at the box office. So, you know, since then, I mean, like, they were trying to get Deadpool off the ground. They hired Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick to write the script right after. And those guys wrote Zombieland.
And
they got hired right after Zombieland happened.
Nice.
And they wrote that script back in 2010. They hired a director, Tim Miller, in 2012. Right?
Okay.
And,
right,
you know, after searching, at one point, Robert Rodriguez was in talks to do Deadpool. I remember that.
Wow.
That was a thing. So they hired Tim Miller in 2012 as like and this was going to be his feature debut. And it still is 4 years later. Because I mean, he's been spending all his time trying to get Deadpool off the ground.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
But they hired him to do it, and like he was a visual effects artist. He did like opening title sequences for movies. He actually did the opening title sequence for The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Oh wow, interesting.
Yeah. and so this movie's been like on and off in production for about 7 years now, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, this, I don't think it would have ever happened if that test footage didn't leak. Like 2 years ago, or quote unquote leaked. I feel like somebody involved just like
put it out there. I saw an interview with Ryan Reynolds, and they asked him about it, and he said, "Oh, like, you know, how troubled production and stuff." And he said, "Yeah, you know, it's about 2 years ago." And he did air quotes and said test footage was leaked, and so definitely on purpose,
right? And so that footage got a huge reaction on the internet, and I guess the studio saw that and decided, "All right, let's do this. Let's make this Deadpool movie." And they ended up going with the R rating, which is what people wanted. They ended up just listening to fans. They ended up listening to what people wanted out of Deadpool, and what, you know, Ryan Reynolds was trying to do this whole time, and what Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick were trying to do, and Tim Miller, and like, they just kind of let them do their thing. And like, it's worked out very well for them. The movie has made a lot of money.
Yeah. It broke, the February release record, the weekend R rated release record. Yeah, it's broken like everything.
It had the biggest opening for an R rated movie of all time.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. And it had a bigger opening than Guardians of the Galaxy, had a bigger opening than Captain America, the Winter Soldier, had a bigger opening than Man of Steel. This is an R rated superhero movie.
Yeah, and
you shouldn't be doing
PG-13.
This.
Yeah. Yes, Hollywood.
And Matt
hopefully realizes they need to get their shit together.
Yeah, imagine the amount of money it would have made if the people who had to sneak into the movie actually paid for their tickets.
Actually paid, right? I know.
Like, how much money less Zoolander 2 would have made, and how much money more Deadpool would have made.
Ugh, it would have been great.
And so, you know, with all that said, I mean, Mike, Deadpool's out. People seem to like it a lot. What was your take on the movie?
I definitely enjoyed the shit out of this movie.
All right, good to know.
Right from the beginning, the opening title credit, like the title sequence.
The title sequence is fantastic. Yeah.
It's amazing. It's a freeze frame of a car rolling over, and the camera just kind of swivel, like, you know, moves through, and it's like starring God's Perfect Idiot or whatever, a hot chick written by the real heroes. And just breaks the fourth wall immediately and sets the tone for the just absolute shenanigans that are going to happen in this film. And it's great. I had a lot of fun. Ryan Reynolds is like kind of his whole shtick is like this snarky asshole. Like, that's what he's been in every movie. And I'm glad it finally paid off for him. In a big way. It's been a passion project for him. And for some reason, he's been in a lot of movies that haven't done very well or haven't been very well received.
Yeah. That is an understatement, sir. I mean, just looking at his superhero movies. I mean, the guy was in Blade Trinity, X-Men Origins Wolverine, and Green Lantern.
Yes, I agree.
All of which get referenced in Deadpool, by the way.
Yeah, which is great. Despite his you know, not very perfect filmography, you know, I still root for him. I still think, like, he really seems like a really cool guy, and, like, I want him to be successful. He's got this weird attraction. I don't know. I mean, he is a very handsome person.
You're saying you're attracted to Ryan Reynolds.
Hey, who's not, though? So I'm happy that this has been a huge success, and they've already announced Deadpool 2, which, of course, they have.
Right.
Which they even reference in the movie.
Yeah.
Not, like, you know, superheroes have it great. You know, they get an origin movie, three spinoffs, so that doesn't count in the ensemble cat movies or whatever. They make some line about all that stuff.
Right.
And this is kind of, I don't want to say my style of humor, because a lot of it is very dick joke. I mean, which, who's not going to laugh at a dick joke? Which people were afraid of. I guess the studios assumed it was going to be a stupid teenage boy movie, and it's apparently done way better than that by all of its, you know, its box office sales. But the breaking the fourth wall and self-awareness and that kind of stuff, I enjoy a lot. And I know some people don't. They kind of hate that stuff. So don't see Deadpool if you don't like fourth wall breaks, I guess. So yeah, I don't know. Those are kind of my thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, I enjoyed the movie. I think I'm really happy that it is very successful, because the R rating is a big deal,
mm-hmm.
For this kind of movie, and it shows that there are different kinds of movies that can be successful within the superhero genre. Like, it's, you don't always have to play it safe, doing like the same thing over and over again.
Right.
I will say I'm not as over the moon about it as. As a lot of people are, but I do. Uh-huh. I did enjoy it. I think it's very good. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. I think. I think the best thing about this movie is that Ryan Reynolds absolutely nails the character, and I mean, he better. Like, he's been.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's been campaigning for this, for like 10 years at this point. Like.
Yeah. Exactly.
And so, you know, he does a really good job, and I always thought like he could. I always thought he could pull it off. Like, he did. Like I said, I liked him a lot in the few minutes of X-Men Origins Wolverine where he got to speak. And so, you know, he does a really good job, and I think this is like a star making role for him. Like, this is like the thing that people are going to remember him for, mm-hmm. as an actor, is being absolutely. Deadpool, which is good. You know, he's like not like, I don't have too much sympathy for Ryan Reynolds, because like, he is like a major Hollywood actor, but like,
yeah,
you know, he has said, like, in terms of, like, superhero movies, he's had a pretty rough go of it. Like,
right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, so it's you know, good to see. And I think the supporting cast surrounding him is largely pretty good. I think Marina Baccarin and T.J. Miller are both probably the highlights for me. I think they're great.
Mm-hmm.
I think Ed Skrein is kind of wasted as the villain, Ajax.
Yeah.
Who's fine. He's fine. But he doesn't really, like, add too much to it. Mm-hmm. And it's always cool to see Gina Carano as right. well.
Yeah, that's true.
I think the film is often very funny, you know, obviously. And there's a lot of good lines. There's a lot of, like, violence. And it basically delivers exactly what you want from Deadpool.
Yeah,
you
know, exactly.
It asked what fans wanted, and it basically delivered, you know?
Right.
I do think it could have done more to really, like, push the boundaries of the superhero genre. You know, I feel mm-hmm. like, you know, you have this character with potential to really make a commentary about, you know, the genre that he's working in. And I think they kind of skirt that line a little bit, but they seem content to just kind of comment on tropes without without actually, like, subverting them.
Yeah, you know? That's definitely true.
But like I said, like, it's really enjoyable. And I think, you know, the oddball team of Deadpool, Colossus, and Negasonic Teenage Warhead. That's awesome.
which is great.
That's as a Marvel fan, that was amazing to see.
Yeah.
Like, as somebody who I really love Colossus, like, I'm just a big fan of that character. And a lot of people are. Like, he's a pretty popular character.
Yeah, a lot of people, friends I follow on Twitter and stuff, have had a huge outpouring of what it means for them to see Colossus like this. I was like, what? Okay.
Yeah, no, Colossus is awesome. Like, he's actually a great character. And Negasonic Teenage Warhead is also a character who I always really liked, mostly just because of that name.
Which they make a joke about.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, named after a punk song, actually, a punk rock song.
Makes sense.
And, so it's, I think the movie is ultimately, a pretty standard superhero origin story.
Right.
Like, it's actually, like, it's, there's not much that different in this movie than there was from X-Men Origins Wolverine. Like, from a basic plot perspective, like,
right.
you know, he's basically, like, he's going through the same thing that Wolverine did in that movie.
Yep.
You know,
which makes sense. They're part of the Weapon X.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it does make sense. And, you know, it's kind of just a standard story, but and it just happens to have dick jokes in it and, you know, meta commentary. And that's fine. Yeah. That's fine.
Which, I mean, is kind of Deadpool's whole thing.
Yeah, it is kind of Deadpool's whole thing. You know, and
but in a good way.
Yeah. And I think it has to balance like this weird line of commenting on the superhero genre while also existing within an established superhero universe.
Right.
And I think that's weird. Like, it's odd.
It is definitely odd.
And I think it makes it work to its advantage, but it's like, a little, like, screwy.
Yeah, it almost, the X-Men tie-in feels pretty forced. Well, maybe not forced.
I wouldn't say forced, because I liked all the X-Men stuff in the movie, but it's, like, it's odd when you have somebody who's, like, a character who's, like, actively pointing out the tropes of superhero movies and, like, actively, you know, being different from everything else, and then also trying to fit in with this universe. I think of like Kick-Ass, which I think does a pretty good job of subverting superhero tropes and like being like a weird, like a crazy superhero movie that's like R-rated, and like it kind of does similar things to what Deadpool does.
Right, that's true.
And you know, I think of Kick-Ass, but that movie doesn't have to exist as like an X-Men movie. It could just be Kick-Ass.
It doesn't have to. There's no universe to it.
Yeah, and so I think it can kind of like go a little further in what it's trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
Because if like Deadpool does it, you know, it's making fun of the studio's other movie, and the studio has an X-Men movie coming out in a couple months, so they don't want to like so they don't want to talk shit about it. Like,
yeah. Although they sort of do. They like half do. One of my favorite was the McAvoy or Stewart lines.
That was really good. That was
pretty good.
That was very funny. And yeah. And I mean, I do sort of admire Fox's like, I don't give a shit attitude to
especially with this movie.
With this movie. But specifically to their universe's like continuity with the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
Because those, like, Marvel has made like a huge deal about its shared universe and how all those movies are like intricately connected. And, you know, you can watch those movies on their own and kind of just enjoy them. But, like, they work together in a really, like, interesting way where, like, you know, you can watch this and, like, you know, that could affect something happening down the line, something like that.
Yeah.
Fox does not do that. They decide...
Not even close.
You know, there are a lot of times where, like, somebody... Like, something will happen in one movie that will contradict something that happens in another movie. And that happens a lot. Like, it happens a lot in Fox's X-Men movies. But I kind of admire that, because they're kind of just like, well, we're just going to do this because this worked better for this particular movie.
Right.
You know, they're not, like, beholden to the stuff that happens in the past. And they basically rewrote everything at the end of Days of Future Past.
That's right. They did. I forgot about that. But, yeah, I think it just feels a little, I don't know, if not odd, but just like, we get this awesome Deadpool thing, and like, whoop, here come the X-Men, we gotta bring them in.
Well, they don't bring in the X-Men, they have Colossus and Negasonic.
Colossus and Negasonic, yeah. But
like, that's, it's not like they're like Wolverine and Cyclops, like it's...
Right, that's it's, true.
They're pretty B-list X-Men.
That's a good point. You know, and which I guess makes sense, because Deadpool was B-list...
Deadpool was a B-list hero for a while. I mean,
for a while, yeah.
I think part of what's really kind of remarkable about Deadpool's popularity is that he's a really, like... In terms of, like, comics, he's a relatively new character. Like, he was introduced in 1990.
Wow. Which,
you know, compared to a lot of the other heroes that we see brought to the screen, like, you know, he wasn't around in the 60s. Like,
right, yeah.
You know, he didn't exist then, so... I think it's kind of remarkable that he was able to like be as popular as he was, and especially in the 90s, which were a really rough time for comics. Early 90s Marvel comics are pretty rough, especially X-Men comics. So,
but yeah. I guess that's kind of it, though.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, one of the things I did, I think the movie looks kind of cheap.
Yeah, and
I think it's part of its charm a little bit, but also like, the movie feels kind of thin as a result. I think outside of flashbacks, the main story of the movie pretty much occurs at two locations.
Right.
And they're a highway and a shipyard. And that's kind of, and those are kind of boring locations to be at, you know?
Yeah, that's true. But that's also a result of their budget. I mean, they were given not a whole lot of money, because I feel like Fox had zero faith in this and was just like, whatever, we're going to give you a February release date, and you know, good luck, and it turned out to this,
right?
So yeah, I feel like Fox was like, I just didn't care, at all, or didn't believe that it would be a success the way it is, at least.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was a huge surprise.
Right. So I feel that, I mean, I understand the we can only film in two locations type thing. So
yeah, I mean, I'm hoping like what I feel like might happen and what I hope does is that now the origin is established and we've proven that people are on board with Deadpool.
Yeah,
like a sequel could be the film that I was kind of hoping for this time around. Like it just could be right. Like bolder, bigger, more willing to tear down its own genre.
Yeah, I hope so. This is the kind of proof of concept movie.
I would say that. It's kind of like the feature-length version of the test footage that leaked. Like,
right. I mean, I'm pretty sure the test footage was the...
it was the car.
Car. Thing,
yeah, it was the
right?
car thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah, very... But like I said, I mean, we're going to move into spoilers in a minute, but mm-hmm. I think we both enjoyed the movie. You liked it a lot, and I thought it was pretty good. Like, I really enjoyed it, and I'm a fan of the character. It really nails the character. So if you're a fan of the character, you're going to enjoy it, I think, basically. And if you're... on the internet listening to a Deadpool podcast, you're probably a fan of the character.
Probably.
So.
That would make sense.
All right, let's move on to spoilers for Deadpool starting right now. All right, spoilers for Deadpool starting right now. So I think we'll talk about the post-credits scene. Deadpool does like a Ferris Bueller-esque scene telling audiences to go home.
Yeah, in complete with bathrobe.
Yeah, it's exactly the same, which is pretty funny. And then
this is great.
Comes back out and announces that Cable is going to be in the sequel.
Mm-hmm.
So that basically means nothing if you don't know the comics. But
I don't know who Cable is, but I'm sure it was awesome.
Right. No, Cable is a character who he's actually Cyclops' son, and he was part of the X-Force with Deadpool back in the early 90s. They both kind of came around the same time. And they're both created by the same person, Rob Liefeld. So they Deadpool and Cable have like a lot of history together in the comics, and so could be really interesting. Could be cool, you know. I mean, I'm not the biggest '90s X-Men expert, so I can't really tell you that much about Cable. But I think you know, it like if it's the same creative team doing it, and it could be very interesting.
Yeah, I have a question though. I guess we should have mentioned this in the first segment. But did you have any kids in your viewing? Did you notice at least?
I didn't notice any. Like, how young kids, how young are you talking?
It's like below, like, wouldn't be able to be at a PG-13 movie. Because they were literal toddlers in my theater.
Really?
And I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter about parents not knowing anything about the character and just being idiots and bringing young children to an R-rated movie. And it's been apparently been a big issue with this film. Because it's a superhero movie, so, like, bring the kids.
That makes sense.
But luckily they weren't very disruptive in my viewing. I just thought of that. But anyway, when the post-credits thing and he comes out and he's doing the Ferris Bueller thing, I was the only one who laughed. And I felt really confused.
Actually, I was actually the only one who really laughed in my career.
I was like, do people not know what it is? Like, I don't get it. It was bizarre.
Yeah, it was funny because I was actually thinking about the post-credits scene like before the movie started. And I thought to myself, it'd be kind of funny if they recreated the Ferris Bueller thing because Ferris Bueller broke the fourth wall all the time.
Right.
And he had a post-credits scene. And they did. So,
you're just as creative as them, Mike.
So this movie,
Hollywood.
This movie is so good at connecting with its fans that I don't even have to say... You should do a Ferris Bueller post-credits scene. They just do it anyway.
They did it. They knew.
Yep. I do think the fourth wall breaking is kind of interesting in this movie because they don't have like any kind of in-movie explanation for why he does it, like why he breaks the fourth wall. And then in the comics, there kind of is.
Yeah.
Like there's a like they kind of wave it away as like he's crazy. So
yeah, he hears voices. So
yeah, like he's like Deadpool is legitimately insane in the comics, mm-hmm. and I feel like he's not that much insane in the movie. I mean, he's still.
They sort of talk about it, like how the torture makes you go crazy, but like they don't actually address it in any way. And then there's even the scene when he's talking and Colossus is like, you know, we can hear you, right? Like, and he's like, oh, I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to them. And like Colossus doesn't react like at all. Like,
yeah.
like I don't know. It's kind of this weird thing. But my favorite fourth wall break was, when he talks about Blind Al, and he's like, oh, remember that old lady from the laundromat? And he's like, whoa. And then in that, he's like, yeah, her. oh my god, a fourth wall break inside a fourth wall break? That's like 16 walls. That was just ridiculous and really got me. That one got me.
That was pretty funny. Yeah. I mean, so, and the X-Men ties in this movie. I mean, how do you think this fits into the larger X-Men universe? Like, do you think you're going to see Deadpool popping up on an X-Men movie anytime soon?
Maybe not anytime soon, but post Deadpool 2, maybe? I don't really know. I feel like that could be, because it ends with him, you know, saying, I'll think about it, because that's right. The whole Colossus is trying to get him to join the X-Men.
Right.
So I don't know about, you know, maybe in two or three movies, I'm not sure. Just because also they've referenced the fact in Deadpool about, like, oh, it's such a big house, how come we only see two of you ever? Like, you know, like no one's ever home.
Right, yeah. It's almost like the studio couldn't afford more X-Men.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I kind of enjoy the, I want to say small-scale-ness of Deadpool. Like, right. I mean, the whole thing's about him trying to fix his face, really.
Pretty much, yeah. Like, yeah, he's not saving the world in this movie, you know. He's not.
Right. Like, he's not a superhero yet, I guess. So I kind of want them to keep it that way. I enjoy Ant-Man a lot, which is just a small-scale heist movie. Like, I like right. these smaller-scale superhero movies. But I feel like he could at least show up in another X-Men movie, especially with how successful it was.
Yeah,
which
I think
changes everything.
I think Deadpool 2 is probably like next on the docket, but they've talked, like Ryan Reynolds has talked about, like he thinks an X-Force movie could be in the future, which is X-Force was like the more intense version of X-Men that came out in the 90s.
Right. Especially if Cable is in Deadpool 2, which you said was another X-Force member. Yep. That could be the start of X-Force.
Yeah, and there are like certain X-Men, like Wolverine was part of X-Force for a while, and Psylocke was going to be in X-Men Apocalypse, Olivia Munn. She was part of X-Force, and so they have the characters. Like, they could do it.
Yeah, they could do it.
So that'd be interesting, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how Fox approaches their universe from this point forward, like if they're going to do more R-rated stuff. Like Deadpool 2 will obviously be R-rated. Like there's no way it won't be. But like the X-Force movie, I feel like probably would be. Mm-hmm. If they kind of make X-Force like an R-rated alternative to X-Men.
Right. That'd be cool. I should look it up. I can't remember. Somebody just wrote an article about they're afraid Hollywood will take the wrong lesson from Deadpool and have it be about. They think the lesson will be, oh, yeah, just make R-rated, like, you know, whatever superhero movies rather than let the creative team actually do what they want to do, which is what made this movie such a success. They listened to the fans. They were able to do their creative vision. And that's what made it such a success, not just purely the fact that it's an R-rated action comedy.
Right. I think that was James Gunn, actually, who posted that.
Yeah, that's who it was.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had, like, a very long thing about it.
Yes. I knew it was somebody that is like important. Yeah. So, but I think they're definitely going to use Deadpool in a lot more stuff. So
yeah, he's big. He's big now. He's big time. Yep. And I actually think what will be really interesting is that, you know, Fox is making the new Wolverine movie, which is coming out in 2017. And, one of the things that fans have been saying is that they wanted an R-rated Wolverine movie as well.
Right.
Like of the characters that
If there's
one other character besides Deadpool who should get an R rating, like fans think it should be Wolverine. Yeah. And they even released like the Wolverine came out with a PG-13 rating, but they released an unrated version on DVD, which had a lot more like violence and like blood and, you know, all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Was it unrated or was it the R rated one?
Unrated, I think.
Oh, okay.
But it would have been rated R if it was released in theaters. I think it's how it kind of played out. And supposedly it was really good. Like it's, you know, it doesn't add much to the story of the movie or anything, but it just like adds like more visceral stuff to it.
Yeah, I remember I was reading some stuff on Reddit, and they were saying, excuse me, if they put Deadpool in a PG-13 movie, he would have to be aware of it and like be trying to curse, but like be physically unable to do it or something like that.
That would actually be awesome.
That would be hilarious. Yeah,
that would be pretty funny.
Or like they give their one F word to Wolverine and now Deadpool can't say it. Things like that would be hilarious to actually play around with the self-awareness, you know, genre thing with Deadpool.
Yeah, yeah.
If they're brave enough to do it.
Yeah, that would be really funny. And, yeah, that would actually work really well. yeah, so I think, like we said, I mean, you like the movie, I like the movie.
Yeah.
You know? And everybody, it's a big hit. Everybody seems to like it.
I hope it opens up the superhero genre to more unique, creative stuff about within the genre rather than kind of making the same movie 8 times.
Right.
You know. So,
yep, yep.
That's my hope.
That is the dream. All right. Well, I guess that about wraps it up for Deadpool.
Yes. Right?
So, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you enjoy Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I stream our games at twitch.tv/geonerd79. And I forgot to plug it before, Critical Role, since if you like Dungeons & Dragons, why not watch actual professional people do it? that airs on twitch.tv/geekandsundry Thursday nights at 10 p.m. Eastern.
Cool, cool. All right. And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as on my podcast at filmbook.com. And you can follow me on Letterboxd at Mike Smith Film. So thank you guys for listening to Film Bookcast. If you are listening to this via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. It appears so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us next week for a new episode of Complete Works, in which Mike and I will attempt to discuss Nicolas Cage in Tempo di Uccidere, or Time to Kill, if we can find it.
Yeah.
I've been doing some research to try to find this movie. It's really hard to track down.
I would imagine.
Best I can do, like, you know, I hate to advertise illegal practices, but...
Presumably non-American DVD release.
Exactly. Like, it's, you know, what am I, well, like, what else? My hands are tied. So I think there's a torrent of it that is available. Okay. That is in a foreign language... with broken English subtitles, and that
beautiful.
That may be what we have to watch.
Is there any other way that you want to watch Nicolas Cage, though?
Man, I mean, I literally searched for like an hour, just like going through like streaming sites, and nothing.
Wow.
Absolutely nothing. It's
going to be so good.
Yeah,
We'll in the event that we can't find it, I guess we'll watch the next film in his filmography.
Yeah, which I believe is Firebirds, which should be interesting.
All right.
Do you know Firebirds?
I don't think I do.
It's a Top Gun ripoff that came out in 1990. It's supposed to be very bad. It's supposed to be really bad.
Yes. I'm so excited.
All right. And join us in 2 weeks for our next film bookcast, where I guess we should probably review the new horror movie, which got phenomenal reviews out of Sundance, The Witch.
Yeah. I have seen the poster for it. And since I've been avoiding trailers, intentionally avoiding trailers and stuff, I just saw a commercial for it yesterday. And was like, what the this is insane.
Yeah.
And then Stephen King had a tweet I saw yesterday about how it was, like, a genuinely terrifying, like, he gave it very high praise.
Yes, he did.
So
yeah.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, so I'm very excited for The Witch. It got premiered at Sundance last year, and everybody went nuts for it, like, went bananas. And I've been hearing critics talk about it for, like, a year and a half now. So... So it'll be great to finally see it.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. Speaking of trailers, did you see the new Batman v Superman trailer, the last one?
No, I have not seen that one.
It focuses entirely on Batman.
Really?
On Ben Affleck as Batman, and looks great. Like, it makes the movie look really good.
Cool.
You know, so it finally does the job of that trailer supposed to do.
Right.
As opposed to the first three trailers, which did not do great things.
I was actually really loving the like short 15-second trailers that's just like one scene. Like, I saw a trailer that was it's been in other trailers before where Superman like lands in the hallway, walks up, and then like rips the mask off Ben Affleck.
Right.
And it was just like Batman versus Superman. I was like, that's really cool. I want that. I don't want your 3.5-minute trailer. Like, stop, what are you doing? So that's my thing about trailers.
Oh man, yeah, it's gonna be an interesting movie. Batman v Superman. It's coming soon. That's the next big superhero movie.
When does that come out?
March.
Oh my god,
March 25th. Yeah, it's nuts. It's almost here. It's almost here. Yeah. There's gonna be a new Batman Superman movie.
You know what's exciting though, Mike? We have Captain America: Civil War, and then Doctor Strange, I believe, this year. Then starting 2017, we enter a 3 Marvel movies per year future.
Right,
that's gonna be great.
That's 3 movies by Marvel Studios per year future, which is what's really exciting about it.
Yeah.
because we're already getting like Fox Marvel movies and
well, yeah, like those don't count. That's not what a Marvel movie is.
He says after spending a half hour gushing about Deadpool.
Yeah, but that wasn't about Marvel movies.
All right.
So that wraps it up.
That wraps up Film Bookhouse, guys. See you next time. We are out. X gon' give it to ya. Fuck, wait for you to get it on your own. X gon' deliver to ya. Knock, knock, open up the door, it's real.